Today on The Breakdown, we're going to break some copyright rules, and we're going to do it right now. I'm going to start singing, and I'm going to sing too long. There's an amount of time that you're allowed to sing where they can't come after you, and then they can. And we're gonna challenge the world right now to come get us. Okay, let's pick a song. Let's pick a popular song. Grant, what's a popular song? Hit me, baby, one more time. Sure. I don't know the lyrics, really. Hit me, baby, one more time. Oh, baby. See, right now, how was I supposed to know? We are now in violation that something wasn't right. This is like $1 million a second. Well, a minute. Oh, pretty baby. So you're welcome. We're doing Daredevil-like things on this podcast today. And the reason why we're doing that, there's a reason. There's always a theme. It's because the Daredevil-like play of these players, my man. It's the $50,000, really $53,000 buy-in Jeju Triton event. It's eight-handed. First place is $2 million. Second place is $1.353 million. There's a lot of money, is what I'm saying, in play here. And there's 190 entries. I mean, come on. It's not that hard to win all that money, or is it? It's a showdown for the ages on The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey, first time no rehearsal.
It's seven-handed.
Fuck. It says eight-handed here.
Where?
On the Hendon.
Oh, well, the YouTube that is put out by Triton says event number eight, 50K, no limit hold'em, seven-handed.
Yeah, I'm looking at 50K, event number eight, eight-handed. So that's weird.
I'm guessing Hendon is wrong, although it is weird to have a seven-handed tournament.
It's very weird. Yeah. But who cares, I guess.
It doesn't matter.
As long as it's the same event, and we're almost sure it is.
It probably is. At least one of these players cashed in it, so we know that happened.
Yeah.
The other thing you were wrong about, what was it? Damn it, I can't remember now.
Something about the copyright violation stuff?
Yeah, it's that they can only go after you, not me. That's the thing that you need to know. No, I don't remember. That wasn't it. I can't remember what it was. It was going to be a silly thing that I said.
It wasn't something.
It wasn't real. Like, the seven-handed thing was real. The other thing, I was going to make a joke. It was going to be really awesome. But
like all your jokes, they were going to be really awesome.
Yeah, but then the other thing happened. The stuff happened and I couldn't do it anymore. Yeah, no, I got your money. I have your money. It's just that you know how the world is, and I have a car, and one time it went in one direction and I couldn't get you the money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Speaking of, right about now, there is a bit of a thing happening in the poker world once again.
Oh, the Timmy Dwan?
Mr. Timmy Dwan is kind of under fire from a lot of different pretty reputable sources saying he owes money.
Peter Jetton, and then went to Haral Bob.
Yeah, those are the two big ones.
And he denied the Haral Bob one, right?
He did eventually deny the Haral Bob one. But he denied it in sort of a weird way, and he also sort of threatened Haral Bob at the same time.
I don't really know much about it.
Not physically threatened him, but he wrote a tweet saying, like, you know, when you were working for the Mavericks, you know, were you doing, basically implying that Haral Bob was sports betting while he was working for the Mavericks, which would be a big no-no.
Yeah, he would.
It seems very unlikely.
Would that be jailable or just finable?
I don't think it would be jailable, but I think it would just be like, you never work for the NBA again kind of stuff. So at the time, though, Haral Bob, who was the head of analytics for Dallas and wanted to be an NBA GM, so it would have been a really big deal to him at the time. And it would still be bad for his reputation and things now because he's sort of, you know, made himself into a member of the washed community, if you will.
The washed community.
Yeah, like the non-degen community, you know. Like, he hangs out with rich people now and is respected and stuff. He owns a soccer team. Come on. Anyway, so Tom Dwan's been getting fire from all sides, and his responses have been, I would say, just from having seen a few of them, both tweets and interview clips, not really persuasively well done, you know, like... I'm not here to weigh in and say I know anything about any of these things besides what the people are saying. But Peter Jetton and Haral Bob are being very specific with what is owed and why and the circumstances around it. And Tom is just sort of saying, like, nah, no, that's not true. And because then he says something that's kind of incomprehensible. Like, that's happened multiple times already.
That's too bad.
So it makes me believe without knowing, but it makes me lean towards the Jettons and the Haral Bobs of the world in terms of believing them, you know?
Well, I mean, if multiple people who are not associated with each other are saying that, you know, it's not great.
Yeah, I mean, and Haralabob is very wealthy, right? Like, if apparently Dwan owes him like $350K. That money does not mean anything to him. He's worth over $100 million. Truly, I know this. So, like, it's not about that. It's like, for him, it's about the principle. I mean, I'm sure he liked the money, but, like, it's really about the principle, right? So, he has no reason to go after Tom for any other thing that I'm aware of. So, anyway, it's disappointing to see a guy who was, in a lot of ways, like, one of my absolute poker heroes, you know, all the way through. Like, it was so exciting to watch him play. So different. Really, like, he was part of the true revolution of the game. You know?
He absolutely was, yeah. Still probably the best cash game watch of all time is to watch Tom Dwan play cash games in his prime.
Yeah. I mean, even in the $1 million game recently, like, he played all these humongous pots and made some tough decisions, you know? And, like, he played the biggest cash game pot of all time with one pair, you know, and called the all-in on the river with queens. Like, most people wouldn't have done that. Like, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, but apparently degenning, according to others.
Yeah,
in
apparently.
Ways that are such that he can't pay it back, which that's the part that really sucks. You know, like, to be maybe, he's at least in the conversation for best No Limit Hold'em cash game player of all time, at least when he's peaking, right?
From back, at least maybe relative to his peers in the context of the time.
Right, but still, like, can't pay back loans and stuff.
Yep.
Which is not great.
Nope, really bad, and says a lot about sort of the state of the poker world and the players in it.
As we've talked about before.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to be the path, you know, like, people just outkick their coverage all the time and end up in debt, where you don't have to. You can be John Sin or Joe McKeehan.
No one wants to be those guys, man. Everyone wants to be Tom Dwan.
I do.
You do right now, but for most people, once they get to be those guys, then they ultimately all want to be Tom Dwan in the end, right? They all want to be playing at the highest stakes.
I disagree. Like, if I won the main event this year, I would absolutely not be playing the highest stakes. No chance.
Well, yeah, that's not enough money to play the highest stakes anymore. They play way too big. You couldn't afford to.
Okay, I wouldn't even play like a 250, 500 game.
I mean, that's pretty big, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't play that.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, certainly I wouldn't either. I mean, I wouldn't care about any of that personally, but a lot of people do.
And I wouldn't go do the high roller circuit and play Tritons and stuff.
In fairness, you are not built the way most people are built, right? And neither am I. Like, we are not people who go broke.
But
all these
also,
other players go broke.
This is also an availability heuristic, right? You don't hear about the ones who don't. You don't hear about the ones who don't do this stuff.
I mean, I think it's sort of the opposite. You often don't hear about the ones who do. Like, I happen to know a bunch of very famous poker players are in big makeup because I know people who stake them and things like that, right? People that you would never think could be in makeup are absolutely in makeup and, like, a lot of makeup.
Right, that's not what I'm saying.
How is that different?
Maybe if you listen, you'll find out.
Okay.
Instead of with your condescending tone. There's a small pool of players who are like the very well-known players for playing high rollers. The people who actually shoot for that once they think they can, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of players who never take that shot and you'll never hear of them. And they're doing perfectly fine, actually very well financially without any debt, without any backing, without any anything. I think there's a lot of them. You just don't know who they are.
Of course, there's some of them for sure. But I think there's also a lot of guys at those levels who are in similar levels of makeup and debt and trouble.
The way you talk about it, though, is if everybody is to every extent, no matter what.
Right.
And even
that's fair. That's fair.
Like, and that's obviously not the case.
Right. And the higher you go stake-wise, the more likely you're going to run into that because people can't or won't put themselves into those games.
Right.
So you're right. As you drop down, there's things like there's cash games. Like, you and I don't go broke, but it's partially because we don't go up so high in stakes that we could go broke,
because we use general poker principles, right? Actually, I could play higher stakes than I do.
Of course.
And it would still be within the general poker principles, and it would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I play, like, 5-5 with a 2K cap.
That's all that's available.
That's all that's available, right. But, like, I'm not going to go broke in that game.
Right.
You know? So, but I can make a living in that game if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think a lot of people are doing that, you know? I think you're overestimating.
Of course a lot of people are doing that. I'm not saying a lot of people aren't. I'm saying a lot of the people who we know about, who were our poker heroes, that's where this all started, right? Poker heroes.
Yes.
A lot of them, I would say the majority of them, either go broke regularly or in tremendous makeup, which is a form of being broke, right?
I think if they're poker heroes from high rollers or high stakes cash games, I think that is true.
Okay.
I agree with that. But so I think, like, OG poker heroes from before all these super high-stakes things were available probably were making a reasonable living playing the tournaments that were available at the time. And it might have been an availability thing in that they didn't have 25K pluses available to play.
Mm-hmm.
But players like Doyle Brunson
Well, obviously, Joel Brunson did
like,
fine.
Even a player like Carlos Mortensen, mm-hmm. he was probably just doing great without any debt, is my
guess. Hard to know, but yeah. I would guess you're right, but this is exactly the kind of person where I think we would always assume that that was the case, and then often it turns out is surprisingly not
right,
the case.
He didn't play 100Ks and 250Ks and cash games right. where he's buying in for 300K. So, but he was making millions in tournaments from time to time. You know,
not that often, like twice, right?
Oh, right, but it's very hard for him to go broke. You know, at the stakes that he was playing.
I mean, I just don't know if that's true. Like, because you factor in that these guys are also playing cash games on the side, right? So then, I just don't know. And when you win the main event, admittedly, nowadays, like you have so much money, it should take you at least a while to go broke.
Yeah.
But I think those guys go broke too, for sure. But someone like Carlos Mortensen, he won the main event, but how much did he win? He won like $1.4 million or something. Like, you pay taxes on that, you have your life stuff. That goes away pretty quickly, actually, you know?
All right, a recent example would be John Sin. I'm going to guess he's not broke.
I'm sure he isn't.
I know from talking to a guy who was one of the lucky few who had a piece of him that Sin had 88% of himself in the main.
That's a good sign.
I'm not seeing him play high rollers. I'm not seeing him play...
John Sin's a great example of what you're saying. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
No doubt. And in fact, there's a bunch of guys who win who... sort of go back to whatever they were doing, as far as we know. Like, we don't see them pop up on these higher... on TV all the time, right? Who's the guy who won before John Sin? I can't remember his name.
Before John Sin.
The guy who then busted on day one and he was all upset about it.
Kui Win? No, that was 2016. No. So there is right McKeehen, Kui Win. Who's next? 2017.
That's the guy.
Whoever John Sin is. Was, yeah, 2018.
It's the guy who won.
Oh, Bloomstein.
Yeah. Him. So I think he's probably a good example of a guy who maybe he moved up a little bit in stakes, but
he's not broke.
We don't really know about him either, but I'd be really surprised if he was
I would
broke.
Guess that both Johnson and Scott Blumstein have earned money playing poker since they won the main event versus the opposite.
I would agree with you. Yeah. Right.
And I think that might be even true for Hossein Ensan, who won in 2019, and we didn't really respect his game that much, but he had success on the EPT, and he had success there, and I'm not seeing him play high rollers, and I'm not seeing him play super high-stakes cash games, so maybe he
just because you don't see doesn't mean he isn't playing super high-stakes cash games. Right. There's lots of super high-stakes cash games that aren't televised.
Yeah, fine.
As opposed to tournaments where, like, all the big ones, we do know who's in them, right? So it's a little harder to know what's going on.
You're assuming Ensan is more likely to be playing those because he's a spewier player?
Yep.
Interesting. Maybe that's true. I don't know if that's true.
I don't know either. It could be true about the other guys too. It doesn't have to be Ensan. Like, it could be true about Blumstein.
Yeah, it could be.
Just as easily.
But it's not. Hey, let's talk about the hand.
Okay.
It was suggested by Chris Jones. Yep. You got to give Chris Jones some credit. He's probably okay.
He's probably the fourth best Jones on his street.
I mean, I said some credit. That's too much.
On his little patch of land.
Yeah. Wherever he is within a 4 foot radius, usually.
He's in the top four.
Yeah.
For people whose last name is Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be a once in a while when that's a pretty good thing to say, you know? Where you're like, you know, the family's all here. We have a lot of people. We're all crowded in for a photo. It's too much. It's like we're on the bottom of the Titanic here, you know? But I'm number four at worst.
Congratulations,
good.
Chris Jones.
Yeah.
Suggested on Discord. You can find our Discord link in the description of this podcast. You can also suggest on Twitter. We are the Poker Guys.
All right.
We have done a Punat Punzri hand, but I do not remember it.
It's been a while.
So let's just go in with clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. 10K, 25K are the blinds. There are 38 left. 31 get paid. So it is kind of an ICM-y type
We're
spot.
We're getting to the ICM parts of it all.
Right. 50K buy-in. Punzri has 1.7 million. So pretty healthy stack. Doing the math off of 25K is a little harder, but it's fine.
It's like 70 blinds.
Sure. He's going to be the effective stack. Opens to 60K for middle position with King of Spades, Queen of Clubs.
Okay.
Cool. Heinrich Hecklin is H-E-N-R-I-K.
Okay. Probably Heinrich.
He has 2 million in his stack, and he flats the small blind with 9-8 of diamonds. Do you prefer a 3-bet or a flat?
I think we should be mixing with it. I think a flat is perfectly fine, though. You can flat a lot. It's cool. Yeah. If you think the guy is opening like a whole bunch, then I think we should be 3-betting more.
This is a small factor because it's big blind ante and it's 7-handed. So the pot is inflated anyway, but it is a blind level where you should flat less out of the small blind than on your average blind level because it's 10K, 25K. Some levels are like 10K, 15K, and you're supposed to flat more out of the small blind.
Oh, I see, because it costs more.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, but it's like 9-8 suited is such a good hand. You got to play it one way or another.
And to be fair, we're talking about a fifth of a blind difference for cost, right?
Like, I mean, if we're talking about the marginal edges.
It's super marginal.
I'm not saying he should fold this hand.
This hand plays really well as a call, even from the small blind when we're this deep, which we are. We're 70 blinds effective here.
Yeah, and I do feel like we did a Heinrich Hecklund hand one other time. I think it was on a Triton, but I just don't remember anything about it.
Okay.
So that's good.
That is good.
The big blind folds. There's 155K in the pot.
Okay.
Five of diamonds, ace of clubs, drum roll please, seven of diamonds. Heinrich Hecklund flops the gut shot straight flush draw. What an exciting time to be alive.
Oh, it's so good when that happens.
Yeah.
I love when that happens. Okay.
Poonsbury obviously flops a range advantage situation. How do you approach this in general if you're Hecklund and you're playing against a good player? What's your immediate thought process when you flop this well and you're out of position and you flat it out of the small blind?
I mean, I'm immediately thinking about, are there check raise possibilities on this board? Right,
when it's like such a range disadvantage board.
I mean, it's not massively. It isn't like ace, jack, 10, where we would have 3-bet jacks and 10s. At least we can have 7s and 5s very reasonably here.
Yeah.
We can even have ace, 7 suited and ace, 5 suited.
Yeah.
We can have 7, 5 suited. We can have, so we actually have a bunch of strong hands here.
Right.
So that's pretty good.
But we just don't have as many big aces as a percentage of our range.
We do not. Like, we can have ace-jack suited, I guess, and maybe some ace-queens.
Yeah.
Generally, we're going to 3-bet those ace-queens, but not always, I guess. Yeah, we don't have... And obviously, we like essentially never have ace-king. Like, maybe the tiniest bit because we're, you know, trying to balance, but essentially, we can't have it. So, but we do have sets, and we do have two pairs. For sure. A bunch of two-pair combos.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. So that would be my first thought is, like, I actually do have a bunch of strong hands here that I could be check-raising for value on this board. So that's a good start. One thing I'm always thinking about, too, is if I don't know that there's good check-raising options on a board like this, then I start to worry about, so if I check call, am I going to have to check fold on certain turns where if he bets big enough, and like how much that's going to suck with a hand like this? How I really want to see, I really want to get to the river if at all possible.
He could greenwood it and just, like, make a mathematically bad call on the turn because it's deceptive.
You could. But mostly you don't want to do that, right? You need to do that against very particular players.
Yeah.
And Greenwood was against Stephen Chidwick, and he knows Stephen Chidwick. He's played with him so much. He knows that if a diamond comes, or in that case it was a heart, but if a heart comes, like, Chidwick is going to bomb it because I should never be able to have hearts. And it's like a guarantee, right? If he's bluffing anyway, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that we can... know that here, especially on this board, where if we call twice, I don't know, you know, I just don't know if he's even going to fire again, even if he has to have a pretty good hand to fire a third time, right? So I start to worry about that a little bit. It's like, am I going to be able to realize my equity, or what's the best way to try and realize my equity here? Do I want to go for fold equity too? But sometimes I'm not going to be able to realize it at all. I'm going to inflate a pot. I'm going to play a pot way too big for the hand that I have sometimes. But I really don't want to I don't have to fold out the turn unless the board pairs and he bets huge.
I do feel like if we're going to have check raises at all in this scenario, which maybe we don't, maybe we just don't have check raises in this spot, that this hand falls squarely into a hand that makes sense to check raise. I think all of the combo draws make tons of sense because we aren't going to be wanting to check raise our nut flush draws that often because the ace is on the board.
Correct.
So then how are we going to balance against our two pairs and sets?
Mm-hmm.
And combo draws make the most sense.
We also have, like, no showdown value with this hand versus if we had, like, king-queen of diamonds, which is another hand we could have flatted pretty comfortably from the small blind. We actually do have showdown value there, right? Like, we could have the best hand.
Right.
Not that often, but if we hit a king or a queen, also, we can really know that that's often good, even though there's an ace on board. That's still going to be good a lot. And we can also pick up, picking up a Broadway draw, we already have a straight draw, so that doesn't matter.
Maybe he prefers, spoiler alert, he does not check raise.
Yeah.
But maybe he prefers check raising hands like king-queen, queen-jack, Jack 10 of diamonds, blockers, and also they have less equity against made hands, so he wants to add fold equity to them more than hands like this that has more direct equity against made hands.
Because the gut shot's here too, you mean? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, it's a weird one, because sometimes we actually have the best hand with king-queen, but we just don't with 9-8 here, like almost ever.
Right.
It'd be very surprising.
So Henrik checks.
Yeah.
Punat bets 105K into 155, which is big for heads up.
That is big. That's
on
interesting.
This board, I guess. I don't know. It's cool. It's cool that he's doing something different.
It is a. I mean, the board is a little wettish, but only for hands like this.
Yeah.
But it turns out it's nice to have sized it up based on the hand that Hecklin actually has.
Yeah, and Hecklin decides to call, which we've discussed already.
Like, so what do you want to do here? You were saying you like the idea of check raising.
I do.
I think I do too, mostly because I think I can really rep two pair and sets pretty comfortably here. And if I had a set or two pair, I would want to check raise on an ace high board.
Yes.
Especially with two diamonds on the board.
I mean, yeah, so the caveat I had was if we have check raises, I want to check raise this hand.
Yeah.
If we're really just in this scenario, not check raising, then fine, whatever. I guess that's our strategy.
I mean, if we had a set flopped a set of fives, don't we want to check raise this? I feel like we just this is a board we want to check
it's
raise.
It's possible that he's just got an overall strategy that involves not check raising on range disadvantaged boards in this type of spot heads up.
I mean, that's okay, but that's fine. It's possible he has that. So you're just saying that's your if, right?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah. But if that's not the case,
got it.
Then this falls squarely into check raise because you know it's got no showdown value and it's got all the equity and let's do it.
Yep.
You know, this is a good hand to balance against the sets and the two pairs.
I agree. We can also fold out better hands. We can get called. We're rarely going to get three bet, right? Because the three bets don't happen that often on the flop in these spots. But we can get called and build a pot for when we do make our hand, which isn't so bad either, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, a fold is preferred, but getting called is not a problem. The only thing that's a problem here is getting three bet, right? I mean, and also that we may inflate the pot and then feel obligated to bet a lot of turns when we still have nine high, and then we're just going to make a really big pot and have nothing going on when we brick the river, but one thing at a time.
I mean, if we could just get him to fold a lot here.
I mean, I would think we'd get him to fold. I mean, here's a hand he's definitely going to fold. Yep. Right? He's definitely going to he's going to say, oh, I guess you have 7-7 or ace-5 suit or something. Goodbye, king high. It doesn't even matter what you have. I have king high. I'm out. Yeah.
Anyway, Henrik calls.
Okay.
Pot's 365K.
Yep.
Turn is the jack of hearts. So Punat picks up the Broadway draw. It now reads ace of clubs, five of diamonds, seven of diamonds, jack of hearts. Punat has king, queen off, no diamonds. Mm-hmm. Henrik has 9-8 of diamonds. Henrik checks. Leading would be weird now. I'm trying to think of ways to generate fold equity, but that'd be kind of weird.
We did pick up a double gutter. Feels good.
It does. I guess if we're going to lead ace-jack, we can lead this hand. And it makes some sense to lead ace-jack.
We're mostly not, though. We're mostly, even ace-jack, we may go check for a check raise more than a lead, right? Because like we're going to lead and lose a lot of things.
Right. We want him to bet his hands like this, which picked up equity. That like maybe he was going to shut down if he didn't pick up equity, but king 10, king queen.
We could put ace king, ace queen in a really weird spot by putting, but because if we check, they're going to bet, I think, on a board this wet most of the time.
Usually you'd think.
Maybe not always, but most of the time.
Yeah.
And if we check raise, I mean, we're not playing, you know, like low stakes cash here.
Or
like
it's this an easy fold.
Exactly. Yeah. This is like you're up against a really good player who's going to check raise you sometimes on the turn. And if you're folding ace, king, or ace, queen, you're probably getting exploited.
Yeah.
So they're going to hold on a lot, and we're in great shape.
Yep.
If we had it, I'm saying.
Right. So Hunter checks.
Yep.
Punat, who picked up equity, is going to bet 300 into 365. I like the sizing. He's like, go away with your shit.
Yeah.
Like, get out of here with your whatever hand you have.
Like, you don't have ace, king. You probably don't have ace, queen. You can have ace-jack suited, but there's only two combos.
Do you really want to hold on with ace-eight of spades right now?
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have ace-x of diamonds and you flop that well because you're probably going to hold on?
Yeah.
And that sort of sucks, but those are the kinds of hands that are going to hold on now, and that's it. We can get rid of almost everything else. Like you said, ace-eight sucks.
Do you think Punat was going to fire on relatively like not wet cards like the jack of hearts whether or not he picked up equity?
Let's see. He doesn't have any diamonds in his hand, so he unblocks some of the draw. He actually unblocks all the draws.
Yeah.
That's good. But we got nothing going on. I think almost always these guys want to have some equity somewhere.
Right.
So like this is like, great, it looks like four outs. Turns out it's three. But it looks like I have four outs to the nuts, which by the way would also be the super nuts because guess who'd make a straight also?
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, we get it all.
Yeah.
But whatever. I think he's probably checking back. Otherwise, he's probably just betting too much in these spots.
Yep. Yeah, so Punat bets 300K in a 365, and this is kind of an awkward spot for Henrik, and this is part of why check raising on the flop is just easier, right? Like, with one card to come, I know we have the super draw, we have the double gutter, and we have the diamonds.
Can't really fold, man.
But, like, all of Punat's hands that are calling have us in bad shape if we raise.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, so can we can we raise?
That was true on the flop, too. It just was a lot cheaper on the flop.
And we also had more equity against those hands.
And we also pick up the opportunity to bluff turns and rivers, where we might get better hands to fold anyway, even if they call once, right? Versus, I mean, it's stronger to check raise now than it would have been on the flop.
Yeah.
But it's very expensive to be wrong.
Yeah.
It's like tournament changing.
Yeah.
To be wrong now.
Because what are we making at 750 minimum?
I think so. Yeah. And now we put in 900 of our starting stack of 2 million.
Right.
Like, wow. We had 80 blinds, you know?
So you think we just have to continue, but that continue has to be a call?
We cannot fold. Yes. Right. We're getting way too good a price. We're getting 2-1, better than 2-1.
Yep.
We have cards that will come in, some of which will be disguised. Now, again, a 10 turns out bad for us, but whatever. I mean, it's a little harder to put us on diamonds when we call here, unless we have a combo draw. Like, we're probably not calling with just naked diamonds anymore.
Right.
I think a call is probably the right move, and this is why maybe a check raise is better on the flop, too, so we don't have to deal with this in the same way. Like, it'd be nice to put the pressure on him instead of us having to deal with this. And we're out of position, too. It's tough, man. How are we even going to get paid if we get there?
I know this is not part of, like, the overall metagame, so it would make no sense and be weird, but for a second, entertain the thought of a min raise.
Okay.
What do you think?
I mean, we successfully fold out all hands like this, I think.
Yeah.
Like, he can't afford to call with
all
min raise, right?
All of the stuff that has, like, just nothing but is playing the range advantage game but has us beat.
Yeah. Yep. The problem is that Jack makes it that a lot of things have connected.
But he's not betting a Jack.
He's probably checking back just a lone Jack. Yeah. That's true. So that, but that really cuts down on what he might be betting, right? It's like king, queen, king, 10, queen, 10.
Yeah.
That's about it. Diamonds?
Yeah, but that could be all 48 combos.
Yeah, probably is.
That's a lot of combos.
Yeah. Is it worth it to risk an extra 300K to fold out those only? Probably not.
I don't think so. But which aces is he betting? Maybe it is if he's not betting. If he's only betting ace, king, ace, queen, and two pair plus, then maybe it's worth it.
He probably can bet ace 10 also, right? Because ace 10, like, you would
ace 10 blocks draws. I don't like it as much.
Blocks, yeah, it does block some draws. That's true. That's true. But we can get value from worse aces, is what I'm saying. Like, because you figure ace, king, ace, queen would have check raised anyway. Ace jack is beating ace, king, ace, queen. So if he's betting those, he can bet ace 10 the same. Ace 10 is chopping sometimes with another ace 10 suited, I guess. But could get value out of a worse ace, in theory, at least.
I don't know. When he bets 300K, I mean, he's kind of trying to fold out ace 8, isn't he?
I think so. But that doesn't mean to say he's always going to succeed either, right? Like, and so and it's harder to call with ace 8 if you know the guy's betting ace 10 for value, right?
Yeah.
Like, now you're really in the blender when he's got more value there, slightly thinner value. Ace 8, ace 9 is much tougher to play.
So much easier just to check raise a combo draw on the flop.
I know. It's like, because you can also be like, let's just go. Like, put it, you put in a raise, I'm just going to shove and we're going to find out what happens a lot, right? Yeah. Like, it's only 70 blinds. Like, 70 blinds is a lot, but with a combo draw on the flop, it's fine.
Yeah.
We can just go with it. Once in a while, we're in really bad shape with that, right? Once in a while, he's got, like, ace-x of diamonds or king-queen of diamonds, right. And it's not great. But it's not the end of the world, even with those hands. We've got a straight draw. We've got live cards then. It's not that bad.
Right. And you got to accumulate chips. It's a tournament. It's different if you're 700 blinds deep on the flop and it's Hustler Casino, because then you're in really bad shape a lot of the time with a 9-high flush draw against like bigger flush draws and stuff.
You can't put in huge. You can do a check raise on the flop, but you can't put in all the chips by any means. But at 70 blinds, the other thing is this: getting it all in against ace king right now or ace seven or something like that, right? Isn't so bad. I mean, it's not what you're looking for, but it's not the end of the world because when we make our diamonds, we may struggle to get full value.
Yeah.
But by getting it all in right now, we are guaranteed full value if we hit our hand, and we're going to hit our hand a lot, right?
Yep.
So that's valuable too. So we get fold equity. We get all the implied odds coming in for us. That's a nice combination. I think at 70 blinds, we should just rock and roll on the flop.
But we didn't. So Henrik ends up calling, and I get it.
Yeah.
But it feels so shitty because so often you're going to be left with 9-high having put in all of these chips.
Yep.
Let's make some magic.
Okay? I love it. I love making magic.
This river is magic. It's something that I think about doing a lot, and I rarely pull the trigger. But I have pulled the trigger, and it's
incredible when it works.
Never worked.
Oh, really?
not, I've done... Not, okay, well, let's talk... Not when he does exact...
Go ahead.
Not to this extent.
Explain it.
Rivers of Deuce of Clubs.
So that's a swing and a miss.
Both players have totally missed.
Yeah.
They both hate everything.
Yeah.
Ace, 5-7, 2 diamonds, Jack of Hearts, Deuce of Clubs. Punat is left with King High with King Queen off. Henrik is left with 9-8 of diamonds for the missed draws. Henrik leads for 100K.
4 blinds.
He leads for about 10% of pots.
Yep.
It is so awesome. I love this play from an expected value perspective.
Right. That's where it really kicks in. Is the EV is really nice. We will fold out. We fold out all the hands that are better than ours that are bluffing.
Right.
And there were, as we said, we came with 48 combos really quickly, right?
Yeah. And I've made these types of plays against players where I'm like, well, they have enough bluffs that like I have a nothing hand where the bluffs are beating me. And I don't really want to risk a lot of chips, but it's got to make some sense to like just take a tiny, tiny stab so they make like the sad face fold.
Do you know? Do that as a lead though, like out of nowhere, like where you didn't have the initiative?
I have done it a few times.
I usually do it. I've done this exact play, but where I had the lead, where I bet tiny on the river because I had a tiny draw.
Yeah,
you know, like low cards, and so I'm like, I can fold out the better draws, and it is glorious when that works too. Yeah. You know, they insta fold. You bet a tenth of the pot, and they just throw their hand away. It feels great.
Yeah. All right, so it's an interesting spot for Punat a little bit, right? Like, you have to consider calling when he bets 100K into 965. What if he doesn't have anything?
I mean, it's hard to believe that he would give us this level of price with nothing at all. That's the problem. Like, I think we have to consider raising, not calling, if we want to get to showdown.
What are the hands we're beating that Henrik gets here with? He has King 10, King Queen, 8-9, 9-10... 6-8 and 6-4 if he has it pre-flop of diamonds. All of those of diamonds.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
Anything else that we're beating?
I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, because the turn doesn't bring a second of any suit, so he couldn't have like 8-9 of that suit.
Yeah. It's just hard to believe he's going to give us this level of price, you know, that and we can win without a pair. Like, he could be bluffing with a worse hand. Oh, sorry, with the better hand, too, when we have King High here.
I don't think he can, when we have King High specifically.
Let me see if I can come up with anything. Hold on. Jack on the turn. I don't think he'd turn a... It wouldn't make any sense to turn a jack into a bluff. I don't see how he ever has just a deuce on the river either.
No.
So, okay, he can't be bluffing with a better hand. You're right. Doesn't seem possible. Okay, fine.
What is Henrik repping?
Well, the most obvious thing is 3-4 diamonds. That's the hand that makes sense all the way through. In fact, played it. We played this hand just like it's a combo draw also, you know, and like it's actually a better draw. It's a double gutter from the flop, but we have a double gutter on the turn.
Do you think he's repping the same thing betting 100K that he would if he bet a normal amount?
No, I think most of his range feels kind of strong though. Like, reasonably strong, even though he's only betting 100K. But no, I don't think he's only repping this. I think he would sometimes bet more with 3-4 diamonds when he makes the nuts on the river. And it's a little bit hidden, at least, right?
I don't know how to deal with this with elite players. Like
Ace 2 suited? Is that the other obvious one?
I guess that makes sense. I don't know how to deal with this with elite players like these guys are. But, like, when I'm playing against a player who's, like, capable but not, like, one of the players I would play against, you know?
Yeah,
like
of course.
Not one of these guys. And if they did something like that, I would think they have a lot of like medium aces.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. They're doing blocking bets.
And I would probably raise
whether
or not I had them beat.
Of course, because that's going to work.
Yeah.
I agree. This to me, though, I feel like that's not something good players will do. They're not going to have the medium part of their range. They're going to have, they have a little bit of the, they have to have some bet folds, right? But they mostly have either bluffs or very strong hands, like when they bet this small in this spot, right? Like, I would think a very reasonable hand to bet like this with would be like ace jack. Be a hand where you're like, you're checking back now that all the draws missed, right? Like, are you even going to bet ace queen again? Like, can you get value with ace queen on third street? You may not think you can.
But wouldn't you bet more than 100K with ace jack if you were trying to get value out of ace queen?
That's a good question. Well, all the draws do miss, except for 3-4. So it wouldn't just have to be ace queen. It could be ace 10. Like, maybe ace queen, we could get more of a... Ace 10 is probably checking back. But you're saying not that. You're saying, couldn't we bet more? Yeah, I think we probably could. I think we would. I think we'd bet like at least a little more than this, right?
Yeah, but we have to, of course, consider like if we're going to have this bet as a bluff, we have to find something to balance it
right.
with. So what are we balancing?
So maybe it is an ace-jack type hand.
Yeah.
Maybe 3-4 because it's the nuts we bet more with. and make it look like we missed our draw. But when we're going big, we may even have a big sizing with a missed draw and a small sizing, and it's like ace jack for one and 3-4 for the other.
Yeah,
you know, and maybe not all combos of ace jack, but maybe some. I mean, there's only two combos of ace jack suited anyway, but something like that. And you know, we could also sometimes have, like I said, ace deuce or ace five, ace seven played super slow. Not impossible.
No, I mean, I think these guys do a lot more flatting. Good players in particular these days are a lot less afraid of getting like caught up on than players used to be,
yep.
you know, like 10 years ago. Like, they're okay with it.
It's because it's so hard to get chips out of people.
Right, and they have more tools at their disposal, like distribution and stuff, where you can make decisions without, like, trying to find out where you are and shit like that.
Also, you know, like, just the world of solvers and all that gives them more ground to stand on when they do this kind of a play. They're like, oh, this is actually, a good player would do this. Not like, I was laying a trap, and when someone says, like, I'm so bad, you know, when something gets there and someone bets big, and then they start talking about how bad they played the hand, and, like, you obviously don't really think that.
Yeah.
You made that choice less than a minute ago to call instead of raise the turn. So, like, there's just more ground to stand on, I think, like, from a play perspective. Like, I feel really good here, you know, just doing that. I feel fine. If he catches up sometimes, that's okay. I know this is the right play, and I'm about making the right play.
Yeah, well, it's super cool because it works. I mean, I get it working. If you're, like, against a good player, you can't just make assumptions about this 100K bet about hand strength, right? So you just have to, like, okay, I have king-queen. It's a shitty hand right now.
I mean, we have so many better hands than this to call with. Though we bet 300K on the turn with. We have our 48 combos of gut shots that we turned. But kind of everything else that bets 300K can probably call. Or almost, maybe some diamond combos, but not too many.
But if Poonat really has 48 combos, let's say he has 36 combos.
Okay.
Only suited for... But
you can't fold them all, actually. I mean, if you're just doing a minimum defense frequency thing,
yeah, maybe
you'd have to have 360 combos of value to be able to call with.
But the thing
you're
is,
you're going
to
fold 36 combos if not.
I think this must be a chip EV printing bet by Henrik.
Yeah.
It's just like you're going to lose most of the time. You're going to lose an extra 100K most of the time.
But I mean, let's also talk about what Henrik is actually doing because we haven't done that yet, right? So, what is he trying to fold out here?
These hands. We did talk about this.
Well, we talked about the... okay, you're right. We did talk about it. Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's trying to fold... Yeah. Whatever. I don't care.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got there. It's a really cool bet. We've never seen it before in the breakdown, and we've never seen it work. So.
It's almost... It's not the same, but it's not wildly super far away philosophy-wise, at least from the play.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to give you insane odds to call, so I can't be bluffing, but guess what? Actually, I'm bluffing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, the play is more about, like, the implication of the play, and this is more like, I'm probably getting called, but it's worth it.
You are right.
Yeah.
The play is done with belief that it's going to work a lot.
Yeah.
This is like, the pot odds demand that this is going to print some money for me.
Yeah.
This is actually what's called the post-oak bluff.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's come back to Poonat, though. So, from a distribution point of view, he probably is supposed to call this. He doesn't have any diamonds in his hand. He has the nut, no pair. He's getting 10 to 1.
It depends on how many aces he's betting on the turn.
I don't think there's enough aces in the deck for him to not... for this. If we're just doing it from a straight...
combos perspective?
Yeah, that king-queen wouldn't...
From a chip EV.
King-queen, no diamond wouldn't be part of it.
Yeah.
But I think he's sitting there, and this is why he tank folds, right? He doesn't insta-fold. I think it's because, like, how could this guy be bluffing, though?
Right.
I'm getting a great price, but if he's never bluffing, I'm not getting a great price. And he just believes Henrik is never bluffing, understandably, because it's sort of such a crazy stretch to think that. It must have been heartbreaking for Poonat to see later on the stream, you know, when he gets word that he was indeed bluffed for that.
It's such a smart play by Henrik, honestly, like... It's like such a low stress bluff. You're like, I don't care. I'm just going to do this.
Right.
And if it works, it works. That's great.
If it works once every, you know, 10 tournaments, it's an incredible thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is a really interesting thing to do on the river in general when you have a no showdown level hand and your head's up.
Yeah.
And of course, the story has to be right, meaning like if the guy is showing extreme strength all the way through the hand, probably this isn't a great idea.
Yeah.
Although against some players, even then it might work.
Right.
I actually remember playing in an $1,100 event back in the day. It was the first of the ones on the coast.
WPT Deep Stacks.
It was before it was even that, though, yeah.
Yeah.
But and I was playing, and this old guy was sitting next to me, but he was, like, hyper-aggressive. We were all super deep, but hyper-crazy aggressive. you know, often betting 1.5, 2 times the pot on turn and river, stuff like that. So it was like, man, it's hard. And so people would like try and hang on, but he would usually get him to fold by the river. And so I picked up pocket aces and I raised and he called and it was just the two of us. And I think I bet the flop. And then a third spade came on the turn. I did not have a spade in my hand. And I check called like more than a pot size bet. And the river was a fourth spade. And I sat there and I realized he was going to blow me off the hand.
Yeah.
And so I bet 1/20th of the pot. And he insta-folded.
Nice.
And I was like, cool. Like, that's got to be better. Right. Like, losing that 1/20th of the pot has got to be better than me check folding the best hand any amount of the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was pretty nice.
Cool. Yeah. Nice work.
Yeah.
And nice work, Heinrich.
Yeah. Heinrich Hecklin.
Hecklin. The Heckliner.
The Heckliner?
That's what I call him.
That sounds like...
When we go out for giant beers in Germany or wherever he's from, I call him the Heckliner.
Heckliner sounds like something that would be illegal to do.
Yeah, it
to
is.
To someone.
It is.
What did he do? He Heckliner.
Don't do it. Don't do it. We'll see you next time.
Okay. Hey. First time, no rehearsal. I say fuck the second take. 90s baby scratching them vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second dates. I'm the rapper most likely to make you take.